Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MG, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. As usual, I'd like to give a quick shout-out before we begin to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. I'd also like to utilize this opportunity to give a huge shout-out and thank you to all the awesome people who support me over at patreon.com/mdginquarantine. So, huge shout-out and thank you to Mr. Big Benz, Anomaly, Draco Lucian, Neo Royal, Nick S., Infamous Fridge, Frugal Brutal, and Jen of the Filthy MTG Casuals for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/mtginquarantine for more information. Today's episode of the podcast is another in the Know a Brewer series that I just started up. It's really awesome, and I promise this episode's going to be awesome, so definitely stick around and you'll learn a lot. So the idea of this series is, as it says, to get to know other brewers in the broader EDH community, you know, kind of get into their brain, their thought process when they go and try to brew a brand new EDH deck, and really just coax out what they really enjoy about this format that's really open to everyone. So without further ado, I'd like to reintroduce my guest for today, friend of the show, J-Row, also known as the Unsummoned Skull. Welcome back to the show.
Hey there, glad to be back.
Yeah, so again, before we begin, J-Row, you are the purveyor of the Unsummoned Skull Discord channel. If people are interested in learning more about that, where could they go to find that and also find your YouTube channel that you just started?
So I have a Linktree is the term for it, yep.
Yeah.
So I have a Linktree that is available off of my Twitter, at @coach_j_ro. And then otherwise, most things are on Summon Skull. So the YouTube is bit.ly/unsummonskull. I do my own podcast about different tribes in Magic, which you can find at anchor.fm/quote-of-arms.
Mm-hmm. And it also ends up on all the major podcast outlets where you can find my podcast, too. So definitely be on the lookout for the Quote of Arms podcast. I believe you just got a new piece of artwork for your podcast, yeah. No?
Yep. I just got a new big flagship signal for it. So
Sounds good.
Nice and pretty.
All right, J-Row. So, again, on the Noah Brewer series here, like I just said for everybody at the outset here of the episode, I think what we're going to be doing today is really trying to get, kind of dig in your brain a little bit, see how you build your EDH decks, because, again, you've been on this podcast enough. We've talked a lot about your unique building style, doing a lot of color shifting and strategies and whatnot, and your formula for building decks. And I just really like to, you know, talk for the next 20, 25 minutes about your process and some of the results you have really been able to come up with when it comes to brewing new EDH decks. So let's get started with your process and what you look for when you try building a new EDH deck, and we'll go from there.
So to begin with, I have my collection divided into different categories so that I can make decks relatively quickly. Those categories are ramp, card draw, spot removal, multi-removal, or mass removal, you could call it. Just anything that invalidates multiple permanents. And then a larger box of just color-sorted good stuff that can be used for win conditions. So when I'm building a deck, what I'm looking for can be any of a few different things. I find inspiration from a lot of different places. So I take that general formula and those pre-sorted cards, and I apply them to whatever interesting idea happens to cross my mind. So to begin with, I started my channel on the Unsummoned Skull. Unsummoned is my favorite card. So I started building a lot of decks that did newer interesting things with the card Unsummoned. So I have, the first one I made for that was Nyambi Bounce, where I would do things like bounce my own legendary permanents so that I could draw more cards, or I would bounce opponents things for tempo, just basically using the Unsummon effect as many different ways as I could. getting repeated and the battlefield effects, stuff like that. I also made a Simic Burn deck where the goal is to bounce opponents' things to hand and then do damage based on hand size. So those were a couple ways that I built decks specifically to exploit my favorite card and related effects. So sometimes what I'll do is find an effect that I like and build around that. Another thing that I sometimes do is color shift a strategy or archetype. So I did that when I wanted to make a control deck that was slightly higher level. We were building for Salty Saturdays, so we wanted to make decks that might make opponents a little bit salty. So I made a Mardu control deck with 10 non-blue counter spells in it. And I was able to use Zergo as the commander to bash in, and I had Sunforger as a way to instant speed find counter spells. So it functioned as a, it functioned the same way that a blue control deck would. Instant speed removal, the ability to search out counter spells and sort of lock the board state down if I wanted to. I also made Blue Aristocrats with the old school Baron, which is on the reserve list, sadly, so it is quite an expensive card, but Baron is the commander, and that was an attempt at taking the Aristocrat strategy and shifting it to blue, because blue has a lot of creatures that are creatures and other permanents that draw cards when they die. So I'm able to dig through my deck relatively far. And there are only a couple win cons in it, which is why it's a good deck. It's not a great one. But the thing that sets it apart for me is that not only was it a color-shifted strategy, but it was an ode to another friend of the channel, Peter Mono Whiteboarder.
Yeah, we really love Peter around here. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so now that we've discussed a few of the decks that you've color shifted, I guess the next logical question for you, J-Ro, is what really inspires you to build color shifted decks? I mean, I know I have personally done that with my own Borostocrats, where I have tried to turn Boros into an Aristocrats color with, you know, mixed results. But I guess I'm just curious to know what really gets you excited about color shifting strategies, because we don't necessarily see that an awful lot in the greater community.
So I like color shifting strategies, one, because it's a challenge, because there are only limited amounts of effects that do certain things when they have started to bleed into other colors. Two, because I love when Magic design starts to dip that way. One of my first sets was, so I started in Champions of Kamigawa, which then was followed by Time Spiral Block. So I'm still learning what the colors do, and then along comes Planar Chaos, which was a set designed to color shift. In fact, it had special borders for it, color shifting cards.
Mm-hmm.
So it got me to sort of challenge my thinking on what constitutes a card of a certain color. So that was an interesting thing in terms of seeing the flexibility there. Sometimes it's just an interesting commander that will bring me in that direction. I recently made a Sig Dimir Burn deck. But that was also a little bit of building around a particular effect and finding functional reprints. I would say that's another important thing for me as a deck builder, is I like finding functional reprints. It's kind of like tutoring, I guess you could say, but it allows me to build around an effect and do really cool things with it. So I did that with Sig, where I built around the cards that are targeted card draw that also has loss of life, like Sign and Blood. They've been making a lot of those effects recently, and I just posted on that on Twitter today, actually.
Interesting, yeah.
How many? There's more than five of them, right? And 10 is what I need to build a deck. And there's more than five already, and a couple that are similar enough, and I can build a deck. So those were particularly interesting for me for my Sig Burn deck, because it allows me to either draw cards further if I want to, and not be the threat of the table, even though I don't build up a board presence, because my life total's low. It's one of those, don't hit me, I'm lower than everybody else. And then there's the other aspect of it, where if somebody else needs cards, like let's say I played it at a table with a five-color dragon stack that was struggling on mana. If I target that player with the card draw, it does two jobs. One of them is that it helps them out, and it sort of is nice to the table that way. It's sort of a group hug element. But it doesn't get the table angry, because I'm not just giving them something. I'm taking some of their life away. So I might do something like sign in blood a player, and then hit them with Stig for that third damage, and I'll draw a card myself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an example of another color-shifted archetype that's built around a particular effect using functional reprints. When they start making lots of effects, especially at common or uncommon, that's a really good way to learn how to build decks, and it's also a good way to learn how to speculate on cards. For example, there's a time when Faithless Looting was one of the few ways that you could like draw cards in red and put stuff in the graveyard. But they've since made a lot of effects like that with Tormenting Voice, they made an instant speed version. They made a version that's time released with a rebound. They've made a bunch of that effect. And so you can start to say, okay, I want 10 rummage effects, and then I'll use white's 10 ways to add lands to hand. And I'll use those two things together. White puts lands in the hand, red rummages the lands away and digs me to actual cards. So white makes sure I hit my land drops. Red says, okay, now that I have enough, I can rummage them away for real cards. And I use that as the basis for my Lorehold deck. Oh, thank God.
Quintorius, Field Historian?
Yeah, Quint. Yeah, sorry. I have a lot of decks around me, so sometimes I forget the particular general, but yeah. And that deck also has a lot of flashback. And so... I'm able to use the rummage effects to discard flashback cards as well. So I have another deck where I use that's my Maya Bredegarde Protector, or I call it Sora Maya, because that's my sister in Romanian. Not that it's actually like my sister, just the name is Maya, and so that's where I draw the connection. So that is designed around using that same white land search ability with green's exploration effects, using those two things together to get extra land drops and to make more creatures with Maya and create a board state with only one card. So I look for repeated effects that have a lot of functional reprints, so that I can use that to create consistency within the deck. So look for functional reprints and additional copies of effects. And then I look for where those cards sort of merge together. So when I'm color shifting and when I'm building around an effect, those are things I look for.
Yeah, that's definitely a lot to take in, but when you really break it down like that, it makes it a lot easier to see, especially when people say that white is really bad at that sort of thing. You're saying that red is able to then be symbiotic, be able to help you not only cut your deck down, but then also be able to find the cards you need by digging out other pieces. I mean, effectively, in this case, mm-hmm. you're drawing the card by adding those planes to your hand.
Yeah. For example, say white's bad. I'd say, well, what can you pair it with to make it better? Pair white with green to get it to find additional lands and put them out. Pair white with red to be able to rummage away the extra cards they're putting in hand. Quint also plays, I always blank on the name, but it's the artifact that lets you play lands from the graveyard.
Oh, Crucible of Worlds?
I don't know why I always want to call it Expedition Map, but it's not. Yeah, Crucible of Worlds, because that takes cards out of your graveyard, which triggers Quint.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do that every turn, because you loot away all, or you rummage away all your lands.
Exactly.
So yeah, you use, so that's why, yeah, I know, like, we talked nice about Peter before, now I'm going to say something that's not as,
controversial.
Well, not necessarily about him, but he's mono white border, and that's where I don't build mono white as often. I don't necessarily like building mono white, because then you're trying to sharpen a sword with a sword. But what you need to sharpen a sword with is whetstone. So sometimes you need another color to sharpen what white does. But that's a different podcast, right?
Yeah, that's definitely a different podcast. So anyway, now that we've talked about a lot more of your color shifting strategy there, J-Ro, I guess the last question I have before we wrap up today is how you've used color. How has your work at color shifting strategies really changed or helped you evolve your understanding and your love of the EDH format? Obviously, everyone comes about this differently, and I just want to hear how what you do now as a brewer has really impacted just how you play the game and how you just still enjoy the game and just provides you that challenge.
Well, I do always enjoy challenges, and as somebody with OCD, having a challenge that I can control really helps me with challenges I can't control. But when we're talking about color shifting and finding repeated effects and functional reprints, that helps me when a new set comes out, figure out what to speculate on. Because I, generally speaking, ignore mythics and rares when a set comes out unless I have to look at them, or unless there's something that really draws my eye, like a new land cycle. For the most part, I look at commons and uncommons, because those are where you get those repeated effects that people overlook. Like three of them, there have been three of those Sign and Blood effects printed in the last year, which helps make those decks actually work.
Mm-hmm.
But other people don't necessarily look to them because they're looking at the big, splashy, flashy cards.
Sure.
But I'm looking for, okay, I divide my cards into those basic categories, basically four of them, and then general win cons. If I find something that does a job in a way that is similar to the way it's been done before, but it has a different name so I can use it, or does it in a slightly different way that's new or cool for that color, like Jessica's Will, then those are the things that I speculate on. Those are the things that I'll try to get those ahead of any changes in price. I might still get those when they're, or I might order them when they're still in pre-ordering. Because those are things I know I'm going to want, not necessarily for a deck that I have, but for decks that I'm going to build.
Yeah, that's a really interesting way of looking at things, honestly. We're all usually caught up trying to look at whatever big splashy spells are out there. People are always trying to find, you know, ways to break the new legends, for instance. But yeah, I've kind of found that sometimes if you really dig into the commons and uncommons, you can find some very, very broken things. Like, again, just in your post today on Twitter, like Blood Pact, for instance, I have started to jam that card, which is an instant version of Sign and Blood, for two and a black instead of black, which does the exact same thing, but at instant speed. So I feel like if you just need some even redundant card draw, you know, the fact that you can get those same two cards at instant speed and only need a single black really gives you a lot of the flexibility that Sign and Blood doesn't necessarily always have. And, you know, if you're playing Sign and Blood or Read the Bones, things like that, you know, for your own card draw, it's a really nice redundant effect to have.
Yeah, so I guess one more thing before we go. There are a couple of other places that I draw inspiration from. One of them is I've been playing for a decent amount of time. and I played at a very high level for a while. So there are some interactions that stick with me and some cards that stick with me. For example, I made my, I have a green-red Clothis deck that's built around Form of the Dragon because Enduring Ideal was one of my favorite decks. And I actually went and made top eight of Nationals with an Enduring Ideal deck that won with Form of the Dragon. So it's my attempt to make Form of the Dragon work in Commander. I have a, but I have a couple of decks that are designed not necessarily about, around specific cards, but I have Umori, which is designed around Seasons Past, which loops when you have a tutor. And that's something I would not have known about if it wasn't for watching John Finkel do that in a feature match in a Pro Tour. There is a Neheb, so I have my Neheb Dragon's Approach deck, which functions very similarly to the Mono Red Dragonstorm decks from 2007. In a standard match between, so the famous one is the shots from the Ghastly Knoll between Pat Shapin, who's another player from my area, and actually is a, well, I haven't talked to him as much recently, but he was a friend of mine, because he used to play at the same LGS. he played against was it Gabriel Nassif in one of the crazier luck games you'll ever see. So I designed my Neheb's Dragon Approach deck to be similar to that. Basically a burn deck that has dragons, or that has the ability to find dragons to do that a combo win. So I have those as decks to, inspired by old standard decks. I have a couple of decks that I built around altars, where I got an altar made and then designed a deck around the altar to basically fit what the card looked like. So I got a an altar of Kalane the Artist as a Smeargle, and so I decided to design a deck around Smeargle's signature Pokemon move, which is Sketch. So the deck is designed to cast opponent spells, either casting their creatures and getting the boost with Kalane, or copying their spells on the stack with like Fork. So literally all it can do is sketch opponent stuff. It does very little by itself. I got an altar of Tetiova as Ludicolo, which is known for dancing. So I designed that Tetiova deck around Moonfolk and Exploration effects so that I can bounce and replay the lands. And I call that deck Moondance because it's kind of like a little dance where I'm bouncing and replaying and bouncing and replaying. Plus, you know me, bouncing is kind of what I do. Speaking of bouncing, gotta bounce.
All right.
Seemed like a fun line to end on.
Oh, yeah, actually, that's perfect. That is perfect. Anyway, thanks, J-Ro, for taking the time to talk with me today. It's been great being able to just chat about your color shifting strategies and just your EDH work in general.
Absolutely, thank you.
And
in particular,
again,
I would focus on the looking for functional reprints when a set comes out, because that is a good way to save some money.
Definitely. And a lot of commons and uncommons, especially after they come out, if they've been sitting for a few weeks, a lot of those go down to like 10 to 15 cents, maybe 50 cents if there's a little bit of play in a like standard or something. But for things like the Sign of Blood effects, those are typically going to be extremely cheap. So yeah, pick those up when you can. The price probably will never go up because they functionally reprint them, or they just straight out reprint them, period, in sets all the time. So yeah, just definitely be on the lookout for those commons and uncommons, because you never really know exactly what's going to work well for your deck until you just give it a try and see what sticks. So, again, J-Ro, thanks again for being here. And if people are interested in learning more about your content again, where can they find that?
Right, they can find, they can go on the Skull Symbol Discord server. I am on Twitter at coach_J_RO. I have a YouTube at bit.ly/M7Skull. And I am also, so I have my podcast, which is Quote of Arms. Quote, like we're talking.
Mm-hmm.
And it just got some fancy new art on there.
Sounds good. And you have a really, really good Discord server as well. If people are interested in finding a very laid back place to just play some games.
Absolutely.
All right. And if you're interested in hearing any of the previous Noah Brewer series or just any of the back catalog of this podcast, you can find those on the usual podcast outlets. That is Google, Apple, Spotify, Player FM, Rocket Cast, Pocket Cast, MTG Cast. There's just a million of them. I can never remember all of them. But if it's a major podcast outlet, you can probably find my work there. You can also find me on the Twitters at MTGInQuarantine. If you find the happy-looking Ulyamog wearing a pair of headphones, you've found the right place. I'd also like to utilize this opportunity again to give a huge shout out and thank you to all the awesome people who have supported me over at patreon.com/mdjinquarantine. So another huge round of thank yous to Mr. Big Benz, Anomaly, Draco Lucian, Neo Royal, Nick S., Infamous Fridge, Frugal Brutal, and Jen of the Filthy MTG Casuals for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/mdjinquarantine for more information. And I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode of the MTG in Quarantine podcast. My name's MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.